I'm Hector Garcia, and in 2012, I started an advertising agency in my daughter's pink bedroom and with $750. Today, that agency is worth over $10 million. It took a lot of pain, plenty of failure, and a lot of hustle. Running a business isn't easy, but today I want to share with you what you usually don't see beyond the hustle. Welcome to episode number 5 of Beyond the Hustle. I am Hector Garcia, the host of Beyond the Hustle. Thank you guys for watching and following along. I've been getting quite a bit of feedback from those who are following on social media and even following the podcast. Today, I have a very special guest and excited to introduce you guys to someone that has recently launched a new business just this past year. And his business is quite unique, but he's not just a, he's not just somebody that just started one business. He has a couple of businesses, correct?
Yes.
So you run a couple of businesses, and but he's kind of Houston's version of Dexter. Cue the music. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you guys to Brady Boren of Crisis Care. Brady, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, Hector. Yeah? Always just a joy being around you and your team. Yeah, excited to be on here. Never done this before.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to have you kind of hold my hand through it, but I hope I can,
you do
add value.
You do phenomenal when it comes to, I've seen you do it on Grizzly's Hood News.
Yeah.
I've seen your lives. I've seen your videos on social media. You're gonna kill this podcast. So glad to have you on board. Brady, tell the audience who's listening and watching what exactly, or who exactly is Brady, and then talk a little bit about Crisis Care.
Who's Brady? Well, I'm just like, you know, everyone else, right? Just kind of grew up without mm-hmm. You know, a silver spoon in my mouth. My parents were incredible people, and kind of taught me grit without even saying the word,
right?
Just by the way they lived, you know, things never came as easy. We had to work hard for everything. And we're Christian. We're Christian mm-hmm. people. Go to church every Sunday.
Right.
You know, yeah. And you know, I just, unfortunately, I think in my life, I've just seen whether this is my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know how like you see tragedy and you're like, you could have totally avoided it.
Right.
I've just seen a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have, right? Okay. And so I think to sum everything up is this, I enjoy putting myself in uncomfortable situations.
Sure.
And I feel like that's the moat
right.
that I have around my competition is I'm sort of stupid enough to do a lot of things.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy enough.
Yeah. Yes. So, and I enjoy being there for people who are forgotten.
Right.
That's kind of my vibe. I really enjoy being there for demographics, whether that be whatever,
yeah.
That are forgotten, whether that's because of, you know, some financial thing or whatever. I really enjoy being there for people.
Yeah. It shows.
Yeah.
Completely. Now you're not originally from the Houston area. And a lot of our listeners are from the area. So you've lived in Mexico.
Yes.
Right. And from Arizona.
Yep.
Okay. And then you moved, I think you were on the East Coast at one point.
So. East Coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then to Texas.
Texas.
And then you came here and we can go a little bit more in depth a bit later. But then you start here, you came here and you started you own some franchises,
yep.
Some gyms here locally.
Yes.
And then you decided to start a business called Crisis Care. Tell us, what is Crisis Care?
Man, well, my poor wife, she's got to put up with moving all over the place for my crazy ideas. Crisis care, you know, I dropped out of college. I joined a startup company about 10 years ago.
Okay.
They, 8 months after I started with them, were bought by some big firm. And they dumped a whole bunch of money into us, and I was just employee number 30. And I was the only guy in charge of sales.
Right.
So I was, you know, I was kind of put into this position where I had, you know, all these things going. And anyways, that's what kind of brought us out here. And I've spent the last 10 years kind of doing the corporate ladder thing. So the goal was always to, like, not own a sliver of, you know, sure, some guys in New York or Palo Alto's company.
Right.
It was to, no matter what it was, own 100% of it, and or maybe less, depending on the amazing people that we find along the way. And, you know, we create something amazing together. But that was always the goal. Now, crisis care, it's kind of like the culmination of my life.
Sure.
You know, I would...
So you talk about tragedy.
Yeah.
You mentioned that before. So you'd experiencing tragedy before crisis care.
Yeah.
Okay. You mind sharing a little bit about?
Yeah. So I, you know, like a lot of kids, I, you know, was rambunctious, mm-hmm, made some decisions, ended up in a place called Durango County Jail for, okay, a few months. I was 18 years old.
Sure.
I was in there with guys who were in their 50s, like,
right,
great people.
Right.
And I just developed a love for helping people who the whole world judges.
Right.
You know, I was in there with great men.
Sure.
People who just got...
forgotten. And,
yeah, and just got caught doing the wrong thing and, right, you know, making bad decisions, but good men. Mm-hmm. And so I was in a position at 18 to, you know, addicted to everything under the sun.
Sure.
And just kind of having all of these issues because of, you know, things that I blamed them on. But, you know, just having a decision to either face the music or to have that be your excuse the rest of your life, mm, and to just be a victim.
Sure.
And so that's kind of, you know, that was tragedy number one in my life. Well, you know, there are a few things, but we don't, obviously we all have our,
sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I just kind of developed a love for facing really hard situations.
Right.
And then, you know, moved to Southern Mexico.
Okay.
For a mission for my church.
Okay.
So Christian, we're members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah.
And so I left, after I kind of was like, all right, I'm going to try this God thing,
right,
that my parents had taught me my whole life. I'm going to give it a whirl.
Sure.
Right. And so I did. And I naturally wanted to share it with people.
Mm.
You know,
yeah,
you know, when you have, like, when you have something,
yes,
good,
yeah,
and you're like, I don't care what it is, whether it's,
yeah,
an amino acid or this, that, or the, right, other, right, you just want, sorry, you want people, yeah, to know about it. Right. And,
yeah,
so I left to Southern Mexico. I didn't know Spanish. I didn't know anything. We didn't have any money.
Right.
But went volunteer. We served for 2 years and just literally helped people for 100+ hours a week, just grinding in the sun, trying to help people change their lives.
What?
So
from that place in Mexico, and then from there you went to Arizona?
Yeah.
Okay.
Back home to Arizona.
Okay, back home to Arizona.
Met my wife.
Okay.
Asked her to be my wife in 8 weeks.
What made you come to Houston?
Work.
Work.
That, okay, startup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The startup here in Houston. Came here, mm-hmm, and then there was some type of defining moment, because crisis care is, I mean, you could correct me on this, and absolutely do correct me. It is a biohazard cleanup.
Yep.
It, when tragedy happens in somebody's home or at a house or at a crime scene, you are the person that comes in and cleans it up.
Yeah.
Right? And makes things almost or back to normal, if not better, from what it was before.
Yeah.
That is a very unique business to go into. Like, you know, you could say, I'm going to start a cleaning business or a house cleaning business.
Yeah.
You didn't just say, I'm starting a house cleaning business. You said, I'm going to go clean up blood, urine.
Dex survives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why that?
Well, coming from healthcare. So the startup that I was in was in healthcare. Okay. So there's something called OSHA. Everyone's familiar with OSHA. It's more so present in healthcare. So biohazard, there's a phase to the business where we're going to go get contracts in hospitals. And we'll have annual contracts, and then there's contracts in the prison system that we'll get. We have to like level up a bit in our licensing to get those. But end game, I have a passion for just helping people, right? Like, that was a natural flow into it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like you guys are gonna cut all this out.
No, we're good.
I'm just gonna talk.
You're good. No, go for it.
But
I know how to wind. I know how to guide it, by the way. So if I interrupt, it's because I'm taking it through.
Okay. Yeah. So you know, I worked my way up at this company, and I basically took a deal under the table and broke a non-compete.
Okay.
And I went. Because
you took a leap of faith.
I took a leap of faith. I bet on myself. I did the same model in DC.
Yeah.
And we went from 1 to 10 surgery centers over 7 states within 18 months.
Wow.
I was their CMO. I pretty much played chicken with my job.
Yeah.
I had an altercation with one of my partners.
Right.
And, you know, 29-year-old kid, former VP, I thought I was the
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, if you don't agree with me, I'm gone. And I was, you know, like, my numbers were good. I was like, there's no way they're going
to. Yeah.
And they canned me. Well, they didn't can me. They just said, okay. Both of those partners had graduated from Harvard. Amazing guys. Like, they knew, I didn't deserve to be in the room with them. You know, just good dudes. And I'm just like, I had everything. And then that happened, right? Mm. Like, it was all gone.
Right.
And then I'm left with, you know, I got a job at another private equity backed autism therapy company. And that was great, right? But I was passionate about what we did.
Right.
We helped little kids with special needs get surgery under general anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And they were dying because the access to the care we provided normal doctors didn't know about. So they were sedating kids in their home offices. I was very passionate about this. So it was hard for me to get passionate about anything else. Man, I just felt, you know, men, we succeed so quiet, mm-hmm. but when we fail very publicly and we fail very loud, and it's
humiliating.
It's so weird, right?
It's because like, it's embarrassing.
Right.
It's,
like,
it's, I've been there multiple times.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, year to date, we're at 500,000 suicides.
Right.
82% of those are men. Mm. Every suicide we've cleaned up after has been a guy our age.
Yeah.
With a beautiful family, upper middle income home. Anyways, so. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's you know, it's very, and some of them are very successful.
So successful.
Or from the outside in.
Yeah.
I've had a very close friend, one of my mentors, who recently committed suicide.
Oh.
And business, I looked up to him, had multiple businesses. And, you know, in fact, I was helping him in the process of trying not to commit suicide. But he came on some hard times. But just like what you mentioned. When we fail, it's public, and you know, it hits our pride, and we are built and naturally built to provide for our families,
mm-hmm.
and we see that. I think that a lot of people in that mindset, because I've been there, and I've been in that mindset before, where almost like you have tunnel vision, and you don't feel like there's a way out, and it just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And in my situation, I am grateful that God pulled me out, or I held on to the faith that I grew up on.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's sad because you're going back to what you're saying is that, you know, mental health for men, even more so now, I think that, you know, in the days of my parents and your parents, it was just survival mode.
Yeah. Suck right? it up. Don't Suck be. It up.
It's survival mode. And it wasn't necessarily like... we failed. I don't think men feel like they failed because it was just for them, just survival mode. My father was a migrant worker who picked strawberries and cotton.
Yeah. Right?
In our case, we live in a society where we got to be better, and we got to provide this, and we got to provide this. We got to provide our kids a better life, and they have to. We have to drive a certain car.
Yeah.
And we're held to a higher standard. And not only that, in the midst of trying to provide for them by work, business, or whatever it is, by finances, we also have to be there for them.
Yeah.
And we got to spend time as a father, and we're juggling between both of that. So you have kids too.
Yeah.
Right? So in your business, you got this, you have a wife, and you have two beautiful kids?
Two kids, yeah.
You have two beautiful kids.
Yeah.
And you're sharing all this time, and you're not just one business, you got multiple businesses.
Yeah.
How do you juggle all that?
Oh, man. I mean, it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
You're spinning plates until they start wobbling, and then you're spinning the other one, and it's just a constant.
Because I see you, I mean, you're on social media, and you're always out and about. I mean, when you're like Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of like,
yeah.
I see you like at 11 o'clock at night, and you're out making a run. I'm like, he's never home.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know this is part of the process of getting a business going.
Yeah.
And that's the sacrifice that we pay.
Yeah.
But there's still a time that, I tell this to business owners who are looking, or young business owners, or people who are looking to start, get going. It's going to cost you everything. I always say that. And even your family has to pay the price.
Yeah.
Because somewhere along the lines in your 80-hour work week, you still, that's time robbed from
date night.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's insane. Right. And I think step one, involve God in your decisions as much as you can. I know that sounds like, you know, whatever, but like, man, who you marry.
Yeah, your partner. Your partner is going to make or break your success or your business.
Yeah.
Either he or she's in on it. Listen, or they're
I don't want to give. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, me and my wife have a really fun relationship. Mm-hmm. We compete healthily with each other. She has her own eyelash,
okay.
Like lash bar in Oak Ridge. And they see like 300 plus
nice.
Women a month.
Okay.
And so
you're a house of entrepreneurs.
It's all we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Up until I left corporate America. And yeah, we've been, but yeah, it's, it just, you have to do what you got to do.
Right.
And then I think what kind of keeps you going is I just envision when our kids are in their teenagers, just kind of like being at a point where we can take a step back.
So I'm sure you guys had these conversations and in your experience and now running multiple businesses, what is the hardest lesson you've learned in entrepreneurship that nobody's ever told you? What is something that you learned? It's like, wait, I didn't hear about this. This is new to me.
I think success just magnifies your weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Success is, I don't want to sound arrogant, but success is pretty easy to get mm-hmm. if you can just put your boots on and get to work.
Right.
Right? Like, just do what you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get it on the calendar, get up early, have morning victories, get in the gym. Like, do what you were raised to do. You're going to have success.
Right.
When you get there, who are you?
Mm.
And I think one of the challenges for me is,
That's another personality. It showcases your weaknesses.
Right. And so.
And either it could also be arrogance too, that you
think
there's a lot of pride.
Yeah.
Oh, I created this.
And
I
built this. I've watched the best men become even better mm-hmm. with their success.
I've seen people get worse.
And I've watched myself get, you know, haughty, puffed up.
Yeah, I've gone.
And, you know, and it's just, and listen, we're men, we're human. I think it's natural, but I think that's one of the biggest lessons, right? Is whatever you're building, you're building yourself with right. it. And if you're not careful, you're going to lose yourself because mm-hmm. the success, it will come. Like if you're serving people with intent and you're mission driven and the purpose of your company is to make an impact on people's lives as opposed to turn a dollar, you're going to find it. But when you do find it, who are you?
That's good.
Because right now, man, like, and rewinding before the surgery centers and all that, and during COVID, I went with some partners and bought some Anytime Fitnesses at a deal. Didn't work.
Right.
Nothing to write home about. You know, I wouldn't say failed investment, but pretty close to a failed investment, sure. Just not anything exciting. I can say I have gyms, but yeah, I think, you know, entrepreneurship is just, it's hard. Like it always sounds good and better than it could be. But at the end of the day, it's what
make it look easy too.
Yeah. It's,
and they see the eventually the byproduct of success is money.
Yeah.
The byproduct of going off chasing something that you're very passionate about, which is taking care of people.
Right.
You know, if you're successful at that, you're solving people's problems, they'll be willing to pay it.
Right.
You know, there's times that we don't, I tell you, there's times when we don't charge for marketing. There's times we do things for free and we take on some things that just, hey, let's just do it.
Yes.
And I just know that money's a byproduct somewhere else. I know God's going to provide elsewhere. But, you know, yeah. The thing is that a lot of people have the opposite intent where they're chasing money and yeah. Not chasing the solutions or chasing their heart.
Yeah.
And I think, and I'm sure that the people who chase money, they find success doing that somewhere.
Yeah. Like Jordan Belfort.
Yeah, yeah. You could do that.
He did okay.
But I would tell you the majority of my business owners that I've come across in the last 13, 20 years, 90% of them are all very driven about taking care of people.
Yeah.
And they're successful. The people that I've seen that's done it the wrong way and seen it, they're just chasing the dollar, and you could sense it right away what their motives are, what their intent, and where their heart is. They don't last long.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, going back to your question, like what is crisis care? How did that start? Imagine me just very, very depressed and thinking about, you know, all the worst things.
Yeah.
All the worst things. And, I literally, you know, that's how crisis care was born, is I started looking into who cleans up. Like what happens, found out there is like this whole space, found out private equity was involved, found out that like during COVID, you know, they were buying these businesses. And so I was like,
right,
I maybe want to do this. And then I just kind of did it.
What, you sleep?
Yeah.
You get to sleep.
Yeah. From like 11 to okay. 5.
Okay.
Yeah. So you get some, and then, you know, sleep. You would think we would get more like midnight drama.
Yeah.
But we don't.
Okay.
People tend to wait until like 7 a.m.
Right.
But we've had a few phone calls at night, and then, you know, we've worked late.
So, you know, let's go into crisis care. Let's talk about the process. And so talk to us as if we're fifth graders. Okay.
Yeah.
Why would I call crisis care?
So you would call crisis care, because you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
You're like the demographic that we cater to, i.e. victims or people who are affected by unanticipated tragedy, they feel alone.
Right.
They feel like, holy heck, like, do I call Molly Maids? Like, do I call, like, so, you know, you would call us just ultimately because, you know, there are professionals in this and you should, right? Just like you would, you know, DoorDash, you know, Taco Bell at 11 p.m. at night. You know, it should be a care that is facilitated by.
And a lot of people don't know this service is even available.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so that's kind of why I'm trying to be really loud about it.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a lot of amazing people, you know, shout out to David Morales at Biotech South Houston. Mm-hmm. He's been a great mentor. Jim Green at Houston Clean Response. These are local guys who I just like cold called in October of last year. I've called like everyone in the country just asking them how to do this.
Right.
But these are guys that are out there local. I'm just trying to be loud and unapologetic about letting people know about this.
And you're dealing with death every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's got to take a toll, right? That's got to take an emotional toll. And I'm sure you're dealing with death because death is not segregated to just one demographic. It's everybody faces it one day or the other, and it's either a child or it's an older person.
Yeah.
How do you carry that, and how do you walk into somewhere and it's something that's how do you walk away and carry that on your shoulder, or how do you manage that?
I don't even know, man.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I had. I just, like, it's like I choose to carry it because I want to.
Right.
It's not like I enjoy it. It's just that I believe in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I believe that he came to take all of this. And so as a business owner, you know, it's great because we get to feed our families and at Crisis Care. And you know, we there's a need. But then there's also the, let me take this so you don't have to. And then when I'm done, I'm going to go take it to my Savior.
Right.
And I'm going to ask him to take it from me. And he does, right? Now, every day isn't good, right? Like, there are days where it's like, man, there are some images that I can't unsee, right? Or there are some things that I think about, but at the end of the day, we are eternal.
Right.
And that's something that I was taught from the day I was born. And not a lot of people have that belief. And when they're in these moments, they forget. Right. And for me, I just find it an honor to walk in and to take it. I carry it. Yeah. I carry it definitely. But I try my best to sure. to get it out of here.
You know, Brady, it definitely, you know, it shows that the calling and your purpose is you're very purpose driven and that you understand your calling and your calling is in people's is activated in someone's darkest moments of their lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, the saying is that even through death, God is still good.
Yeah.
Even through death, there is life.
Right.
And I was saying, like, you walk in there and there's still hope for someone. That's incredible, that heart. And you understand that, you know, that you're serving a purpose.
Yeah.
You're there. You're in a mission.
And we're not
you were in a mission. Yeah. You're a missionary down in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right. But your project's now changed, and
yeah.
you're still providing a mission.
Yeah.
Missionary work here in
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah. Now we just have a Square account.
Yeah.
And so yeah. No. It's and don't get me wrong. Like sure. we're not going into these places and going, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Like no, right. no. It's very somber.
Somebody has to.
Right. I think just being there and not saying a word. Just right. being there in there in it with them. Mm. That's. You know, that's a lot.
What is the what is the one service or one project that you just can't get rid of? Like you just feel like this is that one. This was tough.
People dying alone for a long time is always very sad.
Mm-hmm.
The violent stuff is. It gets to me because, you know, you just think about it. You just think about it. And, you know, these people, days before the incident, were walking around. They were passing people. They were holding the door open for somebody at a gas station. They were out.
Right.
And I think, you know, it gets to me just knowing, like, that we're all unfortunately capable of terrible things that I don't even want to talk about,
sure.
you know. I could talk about, I mean, there's, I think the one, we received a call, and everyone grieves so different. Like some people are happy, some people are mad, some people are just blunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I received a crisis care. This is Brady. How can I help you? And this grandma was like, my daughter was stabbed 35 times by her boyfriend. We need somebody to clean it up.
Mm.
And so it's just something that is hard to unhear those words because you're just like, that could happen. I mean, it could happen to anyone and it shouldn't ever, but it could. And it's just, to answer your question, there was a scene of a double murder, suicide
mm-hmm.
that involved a father, a 7-year-old boy and his wife. I walked through the scene with the killer's dad.
Wow.
And we were looking for exit holes and look, he insisted on going in there with me. I typically, we don't ask, you know, but you know, that's a scene where just going into the first room where he unalived his boy, and then looking for the exit hole and feeling the dent on the subfloor and just thinking what had happened days earlier. It's just, it's heavy stuff, dude. It's heavy stuff. And yeah, it gets to me, but in a healthy place now, because when I get home, I hug my boy, I hug my daughter, I hug my wife, I hold them a little extra. You know, it's just, it kind of gives me an opportunity to see what would happen when we get to our darkest point as human beings. That's destruction.
Yeah.
That's a victory for the adversary, right? And so it's humbling to know that's, if we don't watch ourselves, or if we don't, you know, try our hardest to be good people, to, you know, do the things that we know are right, to just be good people, that ultimately, yeah, that's, it's just very sad, a sad situation. So, you know, just having a moment with that father, embracing him at the end, just, you could just see him just trying to be strong. And it's just, how do you be strong when something like that happened?
And that's where the strength of God and faith comes into play.
Yeah.
And nobody could, the thing is, like, when I'm hearing you talking, and I'm thinking how that would have been different if that was a corporate person that came in there and it's just no emotion.
Yeah. That'll be $4,250.
Yeah.
Sign here later. We'll schedule at the apartment complex.
Some major corporation walks in and is blunt, and no personality, no nothing.
No words were said. By the way, no. I mean, I didn't say anything to him.
Yeah.
He just kind of looked at me, gave me the keys at the end, and he just started, like, his bottom lip just started quivering. I just grabbed him and hugged him, and he just started weeping. We both started weeping, and I left. No words, right? But I think it's one of those things that where when you do believe in something more than yourself that is in control of all these things, you just know it's going to be worked out.
Right.
I don't know how. I don't know how, but it will all work out in the end. And I think that feeling is felt in those moments, because as a dad, imagine if your boy.
I could imagine.
And you're just like, the love you feel for your boy, but then you're also like, how is this all going to be right in the end?
We have a client that I think some stuff like that hit me a few years back, and it was we have a client, he had a ranch out in Centerville, became national news, and his father and his three boys, his father was also our client, the owner of the business, and his three grandsons, which is my other client's kids, three boys, and that's all they had. Went off to the ranch right after school. Their oldest son just graduated high school, out there to spend the weekend with their grandfather. Walked in there, and there was just a few days before that, there was an escapee from the Huntsville prison. That escapee decided to hide out in their home.
Gosh dang.
And killed all of his father, and killed all of his kids. And when I went to the funeral, and, you know, it was a sad, you had, it was actually, it was that, and then had their nephew too. So it was like five caskets.
Yeah.
It was five caskets there. And man, it was just terrible. And you see the reality of human nature and how ugly it can get.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, I will always remember this, is the father and my client walked up to the podium, and he went up there and he said, God is good. And when you're like, you have every reason, like I don't know how I would live. And the amount of strength that you see, that the faith and God and how God works, and even in the darkest moments, you see it daily, right? And I think that's where you even draws even closer to God in your faith, is that that's the only thing that probably carries you through.
Yeah.
That strength and stuff like that. And that's what I'm just hearing you talk and hearing these stories, is like, if it wasn't for your journey as a through in missions and your faith and your parent instilling some of this stuff, and even going down the road of where you were in jail for a while as an 18-year-old kid, that created somebody incredible to who's able to have the strength to carry the weight of what you do today.
Yeah. I think that's one of the cool parts about getting older. Yeah. You just kind of, you go, okay, that's kind of why,
right?
You know, a little bit. Because
there's a purpose to it.
There is purpose. And where there's pain, there is purpose. Because I think you just, again, you see people different. You see that pain and you go, everyone deserves integrity.
Yeah.
They deserve honor in these sometimes embarrassing, low, humiliating moments. Because not all of it is peaceful. It's, you know, we responded to, you know, one that involved a machete. And it's just like, it's public. And sure. It's like, how do you feel? Right. But anyway, yeah.
What is some misconceptions that people have about your business?
I don't know. So I've gone, I think it just that we're just like cleaners with Clorox or whatever and go in and like, yeah. We just like,
it's a process. Vultures a really and
like
want to,
yeah. Like I've had all these like weird experiences because I go and I buy my supplies and then as I leave, people are like, I'm like, all right, see you next time. And you know, it's like right out of a movie where people are like, sure, you know, you're not the first guy that's, you know, wanted to do this. I'm like, fuck you guys, like I'm going to be back. So, but yeah, I think it's, it has to be mission driven. And sure. I think what they misunderstand is the ones who stay in this, it really is a ministry.
Sure.
And I don't want to be all
super religious.
Yeah. But like, it really is something where you have to really care about it at a personal level. Mm. And for me, it's just, I've been in hellish places in my life, like all good, like all people, right? Like, and I just want to go there and I want to help people stand after, you know, they're in that. Cause
you're in there and you're dealing with like blood and blood is going through multiple layers of flooring.
Yeah.
Insects,
fleas earlier today. Yeah.
Decomposing.
Yeah.
And you still have the suit on, but can you still smell through the suit?
Yeah, you can still smell it. So
okay.
The last 15 jobs I haven't been on.
Okay.
And I'm really happy about
it. Okay, congrats.
Because I get to deal with the family.
Sure, you get to do that.
And then kind of stay outside the door.
Right.
And have been able to find a team of awesome, like awesome, amazing people who are really good at the technical side of this. And, you know, I can come off Dexter all I want. Sure. But like at the end of the day, I'm gagging.
Yeah, I'm gagging. I was asking like what...
Yeah, my team makes fun of me. They make fun of me.
Have you ever vomited?
Yeah.
I mean, almost. I was not on site, but like...
So, dude, like when I came into Grizzy, I formed the company with the IRS in October.
Right.
So technically, I don't know if you want to edit this out, but like we had seen two families before that podcast.
Wow.
So like... I was going in bidding these things, having no idea what I was doing. Just like,
sure.
I remember the first decomp that I saw. The neighbors were watching me go in and the smell like pushed me out of the building. Like it was so bad. And I it's never going to get normal to me. Like, yeah, I can go in now and look at it. But yeah, it's a challenge. It'll always be a challenge. It's a good thing.
And do you get used to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the problem is now is I can't enjoy a Philly cheesesteak.
Oh.
I just can't.
I will never see a Philly cheesesteak the same again.
I may have ruined it for you, but I don't care because now you have to suffer with me.
Sure,
now we're
right.
Because no,
love
seriously.
To go, by the way, I would love to go on a project with you just to experience what you go through.
Yes.
Maybe we could take some video footage too as well. And just, I'm not sure how open that is to your clients. If that's obviously where it's anonymous and stuff like that, but
you'd be surprised. I'd say one out of every five people is like, heck yeah, I want everyone to know that you guys exist. And like, they're very, it's
open to it.
And that's what keeps us going. Right. Is people, I came out of everything starting this business. Crisis care is very emotional for me.
Sure.
Because again, I don't know if you want to edit this out, but like I almost attempted to do all, like, you know, one of our most common scenes.
Yeah.
And cleaning up and being there for families personally for me has been like a savior.
Mm.
I found a lot of purpose in it.
Wow.
And so, like, I don't know if it's healthy for me to be in this industry.
Sure.
But it's very personal.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah.
What's the...
But yeah, you should come out.
Yeah, I would love to. What's the hardest part of... I mean, I know we talked about the emotional part and it's the kids or, you know, beyond that. In the business aspect right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not the care, because it seems like you got the care down.
Yeah.
What is your biggest challenge right now in business?
Entrepreneurship is just kind of lonely,
mm-hmm.
to be real. Like, my wife is a wonderful business partner. Love you, babe. She's incredible.
Haley, right?
Haley. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can only share so much with your, you know, as a, I don't know. It's just lonely. I would say, yeah. Like, crisis care, to get into the weeds there, I'll leave that for another conversation. There's a lot of components that it lacks and we need to get better with. There's a lot of automations and CRM stuff that we need to build
in. Brother, I tell people we're never perfect. We're in the process of perfection.
But I will say, just kind of overarching fluffy answer to this, entrepreneurship just is extremely lonely, no matter how successful you are. Like, we just had a huge month and no one cares.
Yeah.
Right. And you would think as an entrepreneur, you're like,
we did it. Yeah. We're going.
Like, let's go. Let's do it. It's like, no, dude. Like, next. Right. And so, and that's fine. Right. Cause that's how it's always been. And I think being an innovator, you're just going to be the weird one that's lonely and like alone. Like, you're just going to be believing in something more than most people.
I think as time goes on, like myself, I love to see fellow entrepreneurs win.
Yeah.
I love it. And I love seeing your stories. I love seeing, hearing that you got success. I love that. I there's success for everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
and these are the kind of people you got to collect.
Yes. Absolutely.
And another thing you learned in this business is everything goes to the trash after you die.
Yeah.
But you're just taking with you your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these relationships, like, they really are what you, it's what it's all about.
Right.
Because finding people who are excited about that is very...
Yeah, that's one thing as far as, like, in my journey, 13 years, is the relationships part. I've come across some incredible people, and I've come across some very evil people. The evil people outweigh the incredible, but I will tell you, man, one of my mentors once told me that, Hector, you're consider you a blessed man if you had 10 friends and one of them was actually legit and really was well for you.
Right.
You know, and I said, that's true.
Right.
And he's a very successful business owner.
Right.
And he could share so many stories of how people burned and they see the success and they try to steal the success, or they feel like, why did Hector get to make it? Or why did Brady get to make it and not me? Well, one thing I've learned in this journey called entrepreneurship is that my calling is destined for me.
Right.
And not you.
Right.
Follow your purpose. Follow your purpose. Follow your calling. Don't try to steal my crown.
Yeah.
And, you know, my crown is for me and not nobody else. Mm-hmm. And I will never try to steal anybody else's crown. I will never try to do what Brady's trying to do. And if you were here and one day you obviously you have see so much success, and, you know, the byproduct of that is success is you have, you know, beautiful cars and homes and your family's, your children's children is taken care of. That's a byproduct of that success.
Yeah.
I will not do anything because that's your calling.
You've
pursued your calling. God has a different path for me.
Yeah.
And I've seen where people who are, who try to steal that. I say, you don't touch God's crown.
No.
You don't try to rob that.
Yeah. We all have our purpose here. And, it's always fun too, if you can, collaborate with your friends too and make some money along the way.
Yeah. So, somebody that's watching, and I know we're still talking about crisis care here. What if somebody's going through some imaginable loss, like just in grief? We're all going to face that. We faced it multiple times in my life. you know, and it's part of what we got to deal with. It's that roller coaster, that the roller coaster of life, and eventually we're going to have to get off of it.
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody that's dealing with grief? You deal with that every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, it's just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of how stupid you think it is to keep going, just keep going. And even if it's, you know, just putting one foot in front of the other, it'll get better.
Yeah.
Like it really does. And then it won't. It's kind of like the tide, right? There's high tide and low tide. And I think that when you're there with your family, just kind of anchored in the sand,
right,
you can kind of just understand that gravity's going to do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard times will go away.
Right.
And they come and they go. But to not kind of do it with integrity. It's a good question.
In a few years from now, you look back, what impact do you hope that crisis care has?
I want people to know we cared.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to look to us as the answer to death cleanup in the Houston area, period. I want death cleanup to be, you know, something that was not wanted, but also something that when it's time that, you know, that there's crisis care that will deliver the highest quality care and treat you the way that your loved ones would treat you.
Right.
And do it safe, right? We'll do it the way it should be done. But that, you know, more so than than those monetary goals, I just want to be remembered as a company that delivered care. I come from the healthcare world. Mm-hmm. We say deliver care. I'm a weird contractor because I'm probably the only contractor that will say that, but we really just want to deliver care,
right,
in people's worst moments. And I want people to talk about it, and I want to develop a reputation for just treating people well.
Phenomenal. Yeah. What's next for crisis care?
What's next? Another for van. Another van. More police departments.
Sure.
To trust us with their families. More partnerships. I'd like to get some contracts with the prison up in Huntsville, other state prisons to handle their biohazard removal.
Wow.
On a monthly basis. It will be great for the business, sure, but also it'll be kind of nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
To, you know, be there and to just kind of serve and give back and to have that relationship.
Incredible.
It's, yeah.
After everything that you've seen, now we're wrapping things down right now.
Yeah.
After everything you've seen death, you've seen grief, you've seen, you know, the worst of life.
Yeah.
How has that, what does life mean to you now?
Life is just so fragile.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fragile. I've just been, you know, the amount of rooms I've been in where good people have decided to end it has made me just realize that all this that we're worried about, most of it's just not important. It's just not. And if that's, you know, curt or dry to say, because no one understands the emotions of somebody who's, you know, in these places, but I would motion that if they were to communicate after that decision was made, that they would probably regret it.
Mm.
And I don't know if, you know, I don't know. I don't know if we put that in,
yeah,
but ultimately life is fragile, and the things that we worry about, they don't matter. They just don't. A lot of them don't.
It goes to my next question. Somebody is facing their darkest moment, the darkest times in their life. From your heart, you see them today. They're watching, listening. You never know who's going to come across this podcast.
Yeah.
What would you say to them today?
I'm going to get preachy.
This is all you.
I would tell you that there is a God. And there's a scripture in Jeremiah. So Jeremiah was a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scripture, basically God tells Jeremiah, hey, when you were like in the bosom of your mom, before you were there, I knew you.
Mm-hmm.
And I foreordained you to be a prophet.
Right.
So what does that tell me? It kind of tells me, hey, I'm crazy enough to think that Hector and Brady and all of us, maybe we lived, maybe he knew us before.
Yeah.
Maybe, right? If he knew Jeremiah, why not us? And if we existed before, won't we exist after? And because of all of this, there is a plan and we're here for a reason. And I think that my message to you, if you came to me and you said, Brady, I'm down and out, I don't know what to do, I would tell you, Hector, stop, like, just remember, like, there is bigger purpose to all of this, and we're here for a reason, and God lives, and he is present, and he is alive, and works miracles, and this too shall pass, right? Like, this too shall pass. It passed for, you know, it passed for everyone it did in the scriptures, it will for you. And I think that's what I'd say. Because when you get in those moments, it's kind of funny how a lot of people who, when they get into those moments, all of a sudden they're not atheist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Very true.
So anyway, that's what I'd say. That's what I'd say.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's in our darkest moments, we could see some of the best of God.
Yep.
And I think that's God. I know that's God at work.
Yep.
Kind of talking about your story about when you were hugging the father and his son and did that, the double murder or suicide, God was there. Now, God didn't intend that to happen, but God showed up. And it's just proof of that. It's an incredible story of how life works, but also how God works.
Yeah.
And even when Jesus was on that cross, with spear to the side, crown of thorns placed on his head.
Yeah.
And even Jesus saying, you know, God, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing.
Ridiculous.
And he even said, take this from
me. I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah.
And even then, even in the death of Christ, even mm-hmm. his death of his own son.
Yeah.
God was there. And life was, even life for all of us mm-hmm. was created. Anyways, Brady, it was incredible to have you here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Tell us, how does somebody reach out to Crisis Care? Obviously, if you're listening, watching, lock in this number. Friends, family, anybody that's in government, anybody that's in the police departments, if you're listening from Huntsville State Prison or the prison system,
yeah,
make sure you lock this number down. What's that information?
832-662-4616 is our direct line. You can message us on Instagram, Facebook. You can reach out to Hector and be like, hey, who is that guy on your podcast?
Yes.
But 832-662-4616 will be that main line. You can text or call.
And your website?
www.crisiscareus.com. A little bit confusing because domain. I was like, yeah, anyway. But crisiscareus.com.
Brady, it is an honor and just a pleasure just to get to know you.
Yeah.
You know, and to see that there's good in the world.
Appreciate
you. And continue to doing the good work. And, you know, make sure you guys follow him. We'll have we'll tag Crisis Care and Brady into the comments and the captions. Make sure you hit subscribe. Thanks for watching, listening to Beyond the Hustle podcast. I am Hector Garcia. Until next time, make sure you tune in and lock it in. It's Beyond the Hustle. Be blessed.